Jim?
Hi, Catherine. Are you still in California?
I am. I am in California. It is... You know how during this time, it's hard to describe things that are happening without seeming like you're using a cliche?
For me, no, but I understand that's a common sentiment.
Anyway, there is an apocalyptic quality, I would say, to California right now because of the smoke.
Yeah. I saw the Oakland Athletics.
Are you referring to a sports team? There's a sports team called the Athletics?
Yeah.
This is a serious question.
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah.
It's like calling a sports team sports.
Mm-hmm.
The Sporters.
Honestly, it's more logical than a lot of the names that
the Cleveland
that
Sporters. Use. Right.
So there was a baseball game in Seattle where it was just hazy. Like you could see the thickness of the air.
And they were playing?
Yeah, they started playing. At least one of the outfielders was wearing an N95.
What? Why are they playing?
Yeah. And there's all these fake figures of people in the stands. It just, the whole scene was really...
Oh my God.
Now I'm reaching for a cliche out of science fiction, but that is, you know, science fiction is very accurately predicting the future here. Is the air like that near you?
Yeah. So I've been mostly in the Bay Area, and I mean, on Wednesday last week, I think it was Wednesday. I mean, you probably saw the pictures of the sky was orange.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was night. All the colors were distorted. I've never seen anything like it. Actually, the closest I've seen to it was the moments before an eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
The light gets really weird and like colors get really weird and it gets dark. And it felt like that, but for a whole day. But the strange thing was that day, the air on the ground was actually fine because it was all suspended really high in the air. And then it started to fall down. And
the ash?
It rained. Yeah, the ash like came down and coated every surface. Like every surface outside was covered in a layer of ash.
Hmm.
It's been a strange experience because it's felt like I felt like I kind of adjusted to the reality of the pandemic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we've been in this for 6 months, and New York and March and April were especially kind of frightening and depressing. But I felt like I had kind of reached an equilibrium, but there's something like really freshly terrifying about this to me.
Yeah.
There's horrific stories of tragedy. Many people have died. So many homes just like are gone. National forests are being burned to the ground, and it's going on for weeks. So there's this, of course, element of like, you know, you're reading about these horrible things, but not being able to go outside. Like we're in a situation on the West Coast right now. The combination of COVID and the smoke means that you can't be inside
mm-hmm.
or outside. Like you can't be inside with other people because of COVID.
Oh,
you
right.
can't be outside because of the smoke.
Right.
So you're basically, it's honestly, it's the closest feeling I've had to being like in New York in April, back when we didn't know anything. And it was just like, you cannot go outside. Don't talk to anyone.
Just don't do
anything. And your world gets really, really small,
right.
really fast.
Right.
Anyway, it's been deeply unsettling in a way that I haven't felt since like May.
Oh, no.
But I know that people out here are used to, I mean, this is obviously worse than ever, but some element of this has happened for years. So it's very new to me.
To some degree, wildfires occur naturally as part of the cycle of how forests are maintained, but they're happening more frequently, more widely, being started by people inadvertently, more often. And the season in which they are able to propagate is longer.
So this is a very depressing situation, obviously. I will say I spent a couple hours outside yesterday, and I don't know, I probably shouldn't have. And my like nose is stuffed up, and I feel similar to like as if I smoked a couple cigarettes last night.
Oh, wow.
Which I didn't. So...
But it's a similar effect. Your airways are coated in these little... cilia that are very, very fragile.
cilia? Is that little hairs?
Yeah, these little hair-like projections. There was a...
Hair-like projections? They're not actually hairs?
No, not really.
I don't know anything about the sinus system. Tell me, give me some basic, what's happening.
They sort of wave around and they help us expectorate things from...
Expectorate?
Mm-hmm, you know,
mean like
cough.
Blow your nose?
Yeah, or oh, like get things out.
Expectorate. Mm-hmm.
But there was this image in the New England Journal of Medicine from an electron microscope of the cilia in the airways coated in virus in, you know, human cells that were infected, and they're just
with
you know,
COVID
from these sort of pristine looking hairs to just coated in these little balls of
oh my god,
of virus. Yeah, and you see, it's just, you know, at that level, like a super fragile little environment.
Yeah,
that as soon as you're inhaling particles or virus or anything, it's easy to see how that can be disrupted.
I'm getting a little scared again. So I don't know a lot about what all of this means. I mean, obviously inhaling smoke is bad for you, obviously. But, you know, I've been monitoring air quality and there's sort of this numbers scale, but I'm less familiar with it. So I'm like, I know over 100 is bad, but is it that bad? Like yesterday it was about 150 and I was out for a couple hours. Like, is that really, really, really bad? Like, have I very much damaged myself? Or is that like, okay, if you have to be outside, you got to be outside? You know,
yeah.
I just don't really know how to manage it. And I'm also, I mean, I think this obviously raises a lot of questions about COVID, right? Anything that's messing up your nasal passage cannot be good for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It is really depressing out here, I have to say. I mean, I'm not alone in this sentiment, but
you,
it's depressing.
You are on a search for peace and happiness, and you left New
York.
Yeah,
it's not in,
at the wrong time.
It ain't out here in California.
It's very beautiful here.
Oh, really?
Our infection rate is low.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
I left at the wrong time, at the exact wrong time, huh? You know, Jim, one of the things I've been doing out here, which has made it kind of even more oppressive feeling than before, is so I came out here and my sister gave me she has an N95 for previous wildfires. She gave me an N95, but it has one of those valves on it. Mm-hmm. So your breath comes out, which I understand is bad for COVID. So I've been walking around with an N95 on for the smoke.
Yeah.
And a cloth mask over it for COVID.
Wow.
And it honestly is difficult to breathe when you have that amount of, like, barrier between you and the air.
Right.
I mean, I guess that's the point. But it's a new level of feeling like you are just, your body and the environment are just at odds.
Right.
I'm just curious for a primer on how bad these levels of smoke are, what we know about the effects of pollution on the lungs, and then how does that interact with coronavirus? I mean, this is a pulmonary nightmare.
Yeah. You know, we hear a lot about high-risk populations and pre-existing conditions.
Right.
And I believe there's some evidence that people who have lived in areas where they've already sustained damage from inhaling air pollution their whole life are at higher risk. I mean, you're at high risk of all sorts of pulmonary diseases, so I would be surprised if it didn't also apply to risk for severity of COVID-19.
Right. What do you know about how smoke, you know, what can you tell me about smoke and health?
This is
obviously
kind of,
it's bad, but
this is outside my area of expertise in terms beyond the general that millions of people die as a result of air pollution indoor and outdoor every year, and it contributes to chronic diseases in a way that, you know, we've known is really important, but exactly how to interpret specific conditions and how dangerous they are, like, I mean, when to be indoors or outdoors, this is kind of beyond me. I would like to phone an expert.
Phone an expert. Who should we call?
Today, we're going to talk to John Balmes. He's a professor at Berkeley School of Public Health and UCSF School of Medicine. So he's an MD, a pulmonologist, who has also studied the impact of air quality on human health.
So he knows, he's the guy for this. He knows exactly what smoke does to your lungs and how it might interact with COVID.
If anyone does, yeah.
So he also created this, I'm reading online about him, and he also created this lab called the Human Exposure Laboratory, created in 1985 at UCSF. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read you the page of the Human Exposure Laboratory. The Human Exposure Laboratory, parentheses, HEL, is one of a small number of facilities in the U.S. that are equipped to conduct controlled human exposure studies of inhaled pollutants. The HEL, again, HEL, built in 1985 and renovated in 2008, is equipped with a 9x9x9 foot environmental chamber with automated climate control, generation monitoring equipment for many pollutants, including ozone, chlorine, secondhand tobacco smoke, and wood smoke exposure, et cetera, an adjacent wet lab for experimentation on biologic samples. What did you say? What was the thing that you said? The coughing word?
Oh, expectorate.
Oh, I bet that's for analyzing expectorated liquids.
Yep. So they're exposing people.
So they're exposing people in a chamber.
But it sounds like to things that we're exposed to anyway, you know. That tends to be the line where we draw on human research, you know. We wouldn't damage people in a way they weren't already endangering themselves. If they're going to be doing it, we can do it in a lab and have them, say, smoke cigarettes and watch how it affects the cilia.
The purpose is noble, so maybe we can ask Dr. Balms about how the HEL came to be.
Hi.
This is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Thank you for taking time with us. Jim's here, too.
Hi, Dr. Balms.
Hi, Jim.
Are you in the Bay Area?
I am.
I've been out in the Bay Area for the past few weeks, and I know there have been summers like with some of these elements before, but it is just, I mean, is this surprising to you?
Well, yes and no. It's certainly the worst air quality I've experienced since I've lived in the Bay Area, which I moved here from LA in 1986. It doesn't really surprise me. This wildfire season was predicted to be particularly bad because of the drought we had. And it was predicted to be hot and dry this summer. What was unexpected were the lightning strikes.
Right.
We don't even have much lightning during the rainy season in early August. We don't expect rain and we don't expect lightning.
Yeah. I mean, I know you study this stuff, so it can't be that surprising to you. But I mean, for instance, last week, that orange day, like, is there a surreality or like a surreal quality to it for you or no? Like, how do you experience it as a person living there?
Well, you know, I'm a big Tolkien fan, so it seemed like Mordor that day.
Yeah. You know, that's a good analogy. Yeah. No, it really did. I mean, it was.
Yeah. The evil eye of Sauron, what the sun looked like. Yeah.
Yeah.
The air quality wasn't even that bad that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was the smoke plume was up high, blocking out the sun.
Right.
But we had heavy fog. The marine layer was actually protecting the air we breathe from being really bad. It wasn't good, but it was actually Friday of that week, last week, where there was more sun, but the air quality got into purple.
Right.
Very unhealthy for everyone.
When you say purple, like I've come out to California just recently and the air quality indicators are all new to me. You know, I don't have a innate sense of like, oh, purple's bad. You know, I've been learning. Can you orient me a little bit to, you know, the system that we're using to track air quality, the sort of numbers and the colors?
Sure. It's actually a national system. Your listeners should get familiar with airnow.gov.
Airnow.gov.
That's the website that will give you AQI for your location. Mm-hmm. So 0 to 50 is green, and that's healthy air. 51 to 100 is moderate. That's yellow, and that's can start to be a problem for people with pre-existing lung disease, also heart disease. Then 101 to 150 is orange, and that's when it's especially harmful to people with pre-existing heart and lung disease. At 151 to 200, it starts being unhealthy for everyone, so that even people without heart and lung disease may experience symptoms. And then 201 to 300, that's purple. And then that's definitely unhealthy for everyone. At that point, even healthy people are advised not to exercise outdoors. Most healthy people will not experience symptoms in the red zone.
That is really good to know. That is so good to know. Because since I'm so unfamiliar with these things, I spent a couple hours outside at 150. And I'm now like stopped up. I feel like I have a cold. But I mean, how bad is that?
Did you have a cold or you just felt like you had a cold?
No, I feel like I have one now. I mean, like my nose is running after spending a couple hours.
If I had a cold, I wouldn't try to be outside when the air quality is poor because that might make your cold worse.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have it before. I just feel like I have one now.
Yeah. Well, that could be related to being outside in the bad air quality. One of the risk factors for wildfire smoke exposure is an increased risk of lower respiratory tract infections. That's acute bronchitis and pneumonia, which is particularly problematic when in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I assume you're going to want to talk about that. But
yeah, for sure.
That's but it probably assumption. Increases the risk of other viral infections as well, including, a common cold. And I just wanted to, while we're still on the AQI, I wanted to mention that it never got beyond purple in the Bay Area, but Sacramento was up to 460, which is extremely hazardous. And my understanding was Salem, Oregon was off the index, greater than 500.
Oh my God.
And to put that in perspective, that's like New Delhi in the month of November. It's frequently that high, but people also get very sick from the air pollution in New Delhi.
Yeah. Can I ask a clarifying with the AQI, when you talk about people getting sick, you're talking about having short-term symptoms. Is that correct? Versus having long-term effects from levels of exposure?
Yes, the AQI is focused on short-term effects, but those short-term effects can be serious for people with pre-existing lung and heart disease.
Sure.
I'm curious, how did you get into this line of research?
Well, I've been studying air pollution for a long time, both controlled human exposure studies in my former lab, where I actually exposed people to controlled conditions of exposure to pollutants, and then epidemiologic studies, population-based studies, which I'm still doing.
Can I ask you about your lab? I was reading about it. What do you call the lab?
It was called the Human Exposure Lab, or HEL, because we were just joking about that, because we would have volunteers come be exposed to a pollutant on one day, and then on another day, breathe filtered air as a control, and we wouldn't tell the participants, though they sometimes could tell.
Just don't mind all of the barbecue smell in the air.
It's smoke that you're inhaling.
Did you come up with the name HEL first and then decide on the letters?
Or? No, it was Human Exposure Laboratory, and then we jokingly called it HEL.
It sounds a little That's hellish.
Better. We couldn't make people sick for ethical reasons, and we had to get all our studies approved by our institutional review board. We occasionally had people that were particularly sensitive and did get sicker than we wanted, but most people just developed a biological signal that we could measure.
So you weren't exposing people to things that they would not be exposed to in certain parts of the world just ambiently, is that right?
Right. We never did anything but an ambient pollutant, though we tried and got approval to expose people to diesel exhaust, but we never actually did the study because the hospital wouldn't really let me a diesel generator.
Okay, one more question on this, and then we'll get into the meat of it. But back when there were cocktail parties or whatever, social gatherings, and you would go and someone would say, hey, what do you do? And you'd say, would you say, like, I work in hell?
She's very into the acronym.
Well, I would tell people about what I did, and I might stray into hell, that, nickname for my lab, but not right off.
Got it. Yeah. Not, you don't want to bring that up. Right.
I usually try to explain what I did first and then I.
Right. And then mention that it's called hell. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. I'm sorry for my fixation on that. I just really.
The imagery is a little on the nose.
The imagery
given
is.
The orangeness of the sky and the ash and the fires all around.
In any case.
So even when people aren't feeling symptoms, they may not, you said it's rare that people actually got sick, but you were able to pick up inflammatory markers that these sorts of exposures, like you and Catherine, might have had in recent days if you spent a long time outside would be causing inflammation that could sort of make a person prone to different sorts of conditions, including respiratory viral infections.
Yeah, that's why I can say confidently that exposure to wildfire smoke PM2.5.
What does PM2.5 mean?
That's fine particles that are 2.5 microns in diameter or smaller. And to put that into perspective, Catherine, a human hair is about 60 microns in diameter. So these are really tiny particles that can be inhaled down into the deep lung. And they cause inflammation of the airways and the alveoli, or the air sacs of the deep lung. And so I can say confidently that wildfire smoke does this. It's been shown in wildland firefighters that wildfire smoke causes airway inflammation. And I showed other types of smoke, ozone, for example, both cause airway inflammation. And that is probably one of the mechanisms by which air pollution and particulate matter increases risk of lower respiratory tract infections, including COVID-19.
Yeah. I wanted to ask specifically about that. You know, does it increase your risk of having more severe disease once you've been infected, if you've been living in a place that has high levels of exposure to particulate matter versus someplace else?
Yes, there's building evidence with regard to air pollution, particulate matter in particular, and COVID-19. The best studied association is severity of COVID-19. Including one study that you probably have heard about out of Harvard. I think it's just actually getting published this week in Science.
I have not heard about it.
So it's a study where they looked at the county level, counties with more chronic exposure to PM2.5 had more COVID-19 deaths across the country. Hmm. You know, that's chronic exposure, not acute heavy exposure. But other studies from China and Italy, for example, suggest that short-term levels of PM2.5 do increase the risk of severe COVID-19. Hmm. What is less clearly understood, but there are some studies that are suggestive, is whether exposure to air pollution and particulate matter in particular increases your risk of getting the infection. There are good reasons to suspect that it would increase your risk of infection, but that's not been as well established as the severity of COVID-19.
And that's what most people are really afraid of, you know, is getting a severe case or...
Yes.
So, and you're talking about things where the air quality index, that color might be on the low or safe side, but people have just been chronically exposed to it. That's the sort of effect that might put you at risk of more severe COVID-19 if you do contract the virus.
Yes, the Harvard study, that was actually surprising, you know, because that was a U.S. study. It's not in Delhi. Wasn't during wildfire season. U.S. PM2.5 levels aren't that bad compared to many other parts of the world, and there was still an increased risk. There was an 8% increase risk for every 1 microgram per meter cubed. That's the unit of measurement of PM2.5. So that was actually a pretty strong effect.
Wow.
So in terms of, you know, practical advice for how to handle this, I mean... One situation is the smoke, and, you know, even if it goes on for a month, well, you can get an air purifier, you can not go outside. But if you live in an area that has even slightly elevated air pollution for years, it sounds like that is also really, I mean, have you spent time in communities with, you know, slightly elevated air pollution? And what do we know about how those are distributed and what happens there?
Well, I've done research all over the world with regard to air pollution and have been in India, for example, and in cities in Africa where there's often a lot of biomass smoke from cooking on solid fuels outdoors.
Right.
We do know a lot about chronic exposure to PM2.5, and there are all sorts of health effects related to that exposure. And the Global Burden of Disease effort, which comes out every couple of years, has listed PM2.5 as the most important environmental risk factor for death and disability worldwide. And in places like India, it's a huge component of disease burden. You know, in terms of, you know, wildfire smoke, we just don't have those kinds of chronic exposure studies because the community hasn't been exposed chronically before in general. That's not entirely true. There was an air inversion in Northern California over the Yurok tribe reservation. Mm-hmm. They had bad air for like a month, and the CDC actually used that to study whether masks and air purifiers helped with regard to respiratory symptoms. Mm-hmm. So that study showed actually that if people stayed indoors, that they did better. It also showed that the HEPA air purifiers worked. What they found somewhat surprisingly was wearing a respirator like an N95. I think they weren't officially N95s then, but wearing a respirator didn't actually protect you.
What?
Well, their feeling was that people went outdoors thinking that they could spend as much time as they wanted.
If they were wearing an N95.
Mm-hmm. So that was the hand-waving answer to why that might have occurred. We do know that N95s protect people from wildfire smoke. Unfortunately, cloth masks don't. Mm-hmm. Cloth masks, which we're wearing to protect others from the wearer transmitting the virus, work for that. But they don't protect against inhaling fine particles because those 2.5 micron size particles go right through the weave of a cloth mask. A surgical mask is better. That will get you about 20 to 30% reduction in wildfire smoke, PM2.5. But an N95 will get 95% reduction if it fits you properly. And even if you haven't been properly fitted, it probably will give you, 80% reduction. The trouble is N95s aren't necessarily available to the general public now because of their reservation for healthcare workers,
right.
And other first responders. But the type of N95 that is available is an N95 with an exhalation valve, which is actually more comfortable to wear.
Right. So I have one of those, but I've been wearing that and then a cloth mask over it.
Perfect.
For COVID.
You're great. That's the way you should
do it. It's not comfortable.
I say it was comfortable, but it protects you and it protects others.
I want everything. I want to protect everyone and also be comfortable at the same time. Doesn't seem like that's going to be
possible. I can tell you that if you're just walking, mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about infecting others with an N95 with an exhalation valve.
Oh, really? Because it's just dispersed? It's
you
not
have,
like
No, you have to breathe hard enough to open the valve.
Oh.
So if you're exercising, it'll...
I mean, my level of physical fitness is not extremely high, so I might, even a walk might make me a little winded, but got it. So
that's, if you're jogging or cycling, it's going to open the valve.
Got it.
Just walking, it won't. And matter of fact, we're trying to get CDC to not be so strict about the use of N95s with exhalation valves for the public. I totally am fine with healthcare workers not using them. But, there's a grocery store that won't let me in unless I put masking tape or wear another mask over my...
The airlines are doing similar things too.
I understand that.
Yeah.
And the airline situation is a little bit different than a grocery store.
It seems like an N95 with masking tape over the mouth and the sky is orange.
Well,
you're painting a vivid picture of.
Yeah.
I only say that because they're letting people do these things with far inferior masks. But preventing the N95 with valves.
I'm sorry, but I realize it's after 11 and I
have
another call I have to be on. I mean, I can reschedule some more time with you guys if you need it.
Oh, no, I think that's okay. Well, can we ask you one last question?
Sure.
Which is what do we need to know about air quality and COVID?
We think that there is an increased risk of COVID-19 with poor air quality, and that includes poor air quality due to wildfire smoke, and so that people should try to reduce their exposure as much as possible. And the best thing to do is to stay indoors with the windows closed, portable air cleaners in any room that they want to spend a lot of time in.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you. I know you're so busy and I appreciate you spending the time with us.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Okay. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Some people have concern about N95s with valves because they could be letting virus out, but they should not be letting wildfire smoke in, which is why I think, he said that should be fine to wear with regard just to PM2.5. The particulate matter in smoke is much larger than the virus, so it should be easier to keep out.
Well, I'm hoping for everyone's sake that the Eye of Sauron PM2.5 smoke hellscape clear soon. But yes, obviously, I mean, this is going to happen more and more. And even if we get rid of coronavirus, you know, even if we get a vaccine in the next 6 months, like
we're
there's
not.
Fire season next year. What? Like, definitely not? Did something happen?
We should talk more about
something
this.
New.
Well,
wait, what?
There's not going to be a widespread, meaningfully used vaccine that soon.
6 months?
No.
When?
The world's largest vaccine maker, the Serum Institute, said it may take till 2024.
What?
Pfizer said the pandemic phase of coronavirus is expected to last through 2021 into the beginning of 2022. We may have a prototype that is narrowly used, as Sarah was telling us last week, within 6 months. But we, when you say we, you know, I really think, just to clarify, when we say have a vaccine, we mean usually widely used.
No,
in the
I know,
same way we mean, like, when we have space shuttles. Like, yeah, we do have space shuttles, but, you know, most people don't have space shuttles.
Wait, I totally understood that there was not going to be a, like, widely available vaccine soon, but I did think, like, it could be possible by March or summer next year. You're saying no?
No, I don't think even administration officials have given us reason to think that we would have something that more than a few million people would have received by the middle of next year.
Oh, my God.
In the best case scenario.
Oh, my God.
Plan on that. Plan on that. If that proves to be wrong, I will be so, so happy and so surprised.
I feel like, Jim, I feel like we're back at the beginning.
No.
That's what today is feeling like. It's like we're back at the beginning, you know?
What can I do for you to make you not feel that way?
I don't need your emotional management. I just I want to note that this combination of circumstances is making me feel like we're back at the beginning.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Well, go to the store, buy what you need in order to stay inside until the wildfire is clear. I'm going to give you a list.
Yeah, do.
Go back to episode one.
Yeah, and just get the same stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, wow. Okay, that was a real curveball at the end there, Jim.
Sorry.
2024. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, they could be wrong, but... And that's said to get everyone a vaccine. You know, that's...
Yeah. But I mean, yeah.
What we would need in order to feel that this was, like, gone or not spreading beyond local tiny outbreaks. Yeah.
Right. Oh, God. Okay.
Well, we can do something fun next week, though, right?
Sure. You have anything in mind?
How about a live taping of the episode?
Oh, yes. We are doing something fun next week.
We have long done a live event at the Atlantic called the Atlantic Festival. We are doing it virtually, digitally, online this year. So it will be sort of live. I don't expect it'll be meaningfully different to you, the listener. Because
no, but I mean, people can sign up and participate, right?
Oh, yeah. If you'd like to
talk
sign
to
up
us
and
live?
Come to the session and hear it, like, recorded live.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Register for the Atlantic Festival.
What people don't realize is how much of the stuff I say that Kevin has to edit out.
Yes, come see. I mean, if you think the edited version is incoherent and rambling, come check out how much more rambling and incoherent it can be. No, we're going to talk next week at the Atlantic Festival, which is all virtual this year and anyone can register to attend. We're going to be talking with Alexis Madrigal about the upcoming months and what people can expect. And we're also going to be taking questions and answering some listener questions. So this is a way you can participate live. And there's a lot of other wonderful speakers and sessions happening. So check it out at theatlanticfestival.com. And you can register there for free. The festival is next week from September 21st to 24th. You can hear from Anthony Fauci, Hillary Clinton, Billy Porter, and me and Jim.
Yeah, that would be great. We'll take questions. Can I take questions?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that will be fun. Well, thank you, Jim. We'll talk more about this prediction you just made.
Yeah. This show was produced today by Kevin Townsend, an asthmatic from the Bay Area who appreciated hearing this conversation.
To be clear, Kevin wrote that.
Write us at socialdistance@theatlantic.com or call us at 202-642-6484. 8787 and leave us a message. If you like the show and want access to all of The Atlantic's journalism, the best way to do that is by subscribing to The Atlantic at theatlantic.com/support us.
How's Moses?
Oh, he's huge.
Huge?
Yeah, an enormous
boy.
How big is he? 40 pounds.
40 pounds.
But he's still...
He's like a month old.
He's just like one of those big, hefty puppies, you know? Thick.
Yeah. Big boned.
Yeah, you know, he acts and moves like a puppy, but he's very large.
Yeah, an unintentional distraction to his physical presence.
My large adult puppy son.
Right, right. Well, I'm glad y'all are having fun. All right, well, we'll talk next week.
And yeah.
We can certainly talk more about Moses live at the Atlantic. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.